Good morning. We're in the book of Job. And as always, Zeke gave a great introduction to what we're talking about today about the attitude of we should have toward God and thinking about the glory, the awesomeness, the most amazing things that you can say about God and how those things are true. And you would expect that we're teaching from the same book. So, we would expect that. But in our discussions last week, we started talking about God's answer to Job. And your homework assignment, and there will be Saturday D Hall if y'all don't have your assignments done, was to think about parts of God's answer that help you put God in perspective. What parts of this, the end of Job, do you look at and really help you remember who God is, who we are? Any parts of this y'all like? Yes?
Chapter 38 is the series of questions that God asked Job. You know, before Job was saying, I want to be able to make my defense before God. I want to be able to stand before Him and plead my case, because surely He'll see how mistaken He's been. Right?
Yep.
But God says, well, let me just ask you these things first. And He basically says, can you explain what I've created? And He gives a whole bunch of different examples.
Right.
I always wonder, you know, I ask why a lot sometimes, you know, when there's something, I mean, it could be just some minor blip in the world, and I'm like, oh, why me? Right? But God says, well, can you explain this? You know, and of course the idea is that somebody pointed out before, God says in Isaiah 55, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. My ways are higher than your ways. There has to be some place where trust takes over. Trust that even though I don't understand it all, because later on Job says, I put my hand over my mouth. I'll say, you're
right. Right.
That we need to just trust God. That He knows us and He knows which way is best, and whatever situation we're in may be an opportunity instead of a dilemma.
Right. So a lot in there, but it all comes down to trust. Right. We have to trust God even when we don't know why. Why can be asked in a lot of different ways, right? Why does this work? We can have a curiosity, right? You know, why when you put a CD in the CD player does music come out the other end, right? This is a shiny disc and there's music on it. You know, that's a curiosity. But sometimes we can ask why as an accusation, right? Why did this happen to me? Why are you doing that? Why is this? And we have to be careful that we maintain an attitude of trust toward God. And so it's very true. We try to prove to someone that maybe they're in over their head, a lot of times we want to tell them all the things that we know, right? Because we want to justify, you know, as a parent, well, you know, I know this. And sometimes asking questions really reveals the difference, right? If you're, not a good example. The next one. If you're a teacher and the students, don't understand why you're getting to tell them what they're supposed to know. Or if you're a physician and you're telling someone how they should eat or that they should exercise. All of these things, and sometimes we go, well, who are you to say this, right? You know, but the teacher, why is the teacher there? You know, there's this, the thought, why is the teacher the teacher? Why do we have, are teachers, do they have qualifications, hopefully? Yeah. They should know the material, right? They're there for a reason. They're going to help you. They know more. They're guiding you into the process of learning. A doctor, why do we go to doctors? They're supposed to heal us, right? You can come to my house and I can charge you a bunch of money, but I don't know if you're going to get better, right? Because I don't know those things. And so when we come to God, we have to trust, right? How many people have gotten on an airplane and made sure that the pilot had a pilot's license? You ever done that? Never. No, you just hope, right? Right? And then, you know, have you ever checked to see if they were intoxicated? I've never done that, but from the news, you should, right? We don't do those things, but when we come to God, sometimes we put Him on our level, right? We come from a very egalitarian society. Everybody's the same, and that's true. We're all people. We're all the same. We have different roles that we need to be aware of. You know, police officers have a different role than we do if we're not a police officer, those things. So, yeah, Zeke's exactly right. These questions really drive that home. But are there any in here that help you maybe understand or approach God better? To start the ball rolling, I'm going to do 39:13 through 18. Job 39:13 through 18, we're going to talk about the great ostrich. Dean, would you read that for me? I love this because one of the things that evolutionists say is, well, obviously if there was a designer, it wouldn't have been done this way. Right? Have you heard that? Have you ever heard, well, if you know, this proves because, you know, it's the appendix or whatever else they're going to say, the junk DNA, which is really not junk DNA, they say that's proof that there's not a real designer. And that reminds me of when I got my first engineering job. It was at a company that had a long history of machines. And they would go, okay, Zane, take this machine and keep it mostly the same, but change it to do this, right? And so you would look through all the little components and everything, and invariably I would get to some part of that machine and I would be like, this engineer was not very good because, I mean, that's a bad idea. And I would look at it. Dean and I were working together, and so several times I'd go to Dean, why did they do that? Now, he had a lot more experience than I do, and he'd go, well, because of this, this, and this. And that's what happens when we approach God is that we didn't think it all the way through. Normally, when I looked at that machine, when I finally understood what that other engineer had done, I was like, oh, I'm sure glad I asked somebody and didn't just change this because that would have been horrible. So when we come to the ostrich, is the ostrich smart? No. Is it really smart to put very fragile eggs that are your offspring on the ground? No. Is it smart to take care of your young? Yeah. The ostrich does none of those things. Who decided that? God. Does it matter if we agree that that was a good idea or not? No. And that, it just seems like a counterexample that we think, well, it's gotta be smart, it's gotta be this, it's gotta be that, and then it ends with the ostrich. Ostrich are fast and very, very strong. So, you know, outrunning the horse and the rider. But when we come to God, we often put what we think should be the answer. And if the answer is different, then we somehow think we have, you know, an argument or a cause against God. And I think this, to me, being a science-y geek, is, it's like God's going, no, I made it the way I wanted to. It doesn't matter if you like it. It doesn't matter if you understand it. It doesn't matter if you do it a different way. I'm God. I did it. And just be okay with that. Yes.
And it works.
We still have ostriches, right? My brother-in-law and sister, they ran an exotic game ranch, and they had emus, which are not even as big as ostriches, and they would butcher them and everything, so they shot this emu, and it's kicking, and it's tearing up the fence. So my brother-in-law is a 350-pound guy, and so he reached over there and tried to push it away, and that emu's foot got him and threw him. 350-pound guy just threw him. And so, yeah, he let it tear up the fence. They'd fix the fence later. But, yeah, it's amazing how strong, and they're still around. Yes, Zeke.
I wonder if that was a lesson that Job needed to learn. The fact that, okay, this dumb bird doesn't seem to do anything right, but yet God has still provided resources for this bird to continue. You know, he's provided for his survival. And that's kind of a theme throughout all these questions that God asks. You know, verses 5 and following, he talks about the wild donkey. You've got this place to roam. At the end of the chapter, he talks about the hawk that spies food from afar. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you might think about God's mistakes in biological engineering, God has still made it possible for all these things to survive. And maybe what Job needed to realize that in spite of what you're going through, God has still provided resources for you to get through this. Mm-hmm. Now, Jesus told us in Matthew 6, don't worry about what you eat, what you drink, what you wear. You know, God will see that your needs are met. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get our needs and our wants mixed up. You know, but God always makes sure that what we need, not just to live, but to submit ourselves, worship, and obey Him, is always within our grasp.
Right. So, you know, the part in Matthew 6, you know, the lilies of the field, you know, the birds, all of those things, they're provided for. And so, God will take care of us. And then what is our ultimate job on this earth?
Spread
the gospel. And personally, we have responded to that gospel in that we would glorify God. That's all it's about. And so, very important. Any other sections of this that y'all like? Oh no. D Hall. You have to mow my lawn next Saturday. It's just what was going to happen. Right. Yes. Repeating for the recording. But yes, the breadth and depth of all of the things that God covers, you know, the constellations, ecological systems, all of the weather systems, all of that, the creation, actual creation of the earth, all of this. And when we look at God, He spoke everything into existence we see. Right? And to me, thinking about all of the things He created the Milky Way galaxy, and for as far as my understanding, just because it's pretty. Isn't that a crazy thought? The further we look into space and you see the nebula and all these beautiful, beautiful things, because they're pretty. Wow. You know, I have trouble weeding the garden, right, to keep it pretty. And God creates the Milky Way galaxy. Yeah, we're pretty much the same, right? It's amazing when we think of those things and all of the interactions and how, and the more we learn, and that's what just drives me nuts about science. The more we learn, the more you should be a believer in God. The interconnections and the ecological systems and all of these things. It's just, it's amazing how it all works together. And so, very, very true. So in, chapter 40, verses 15 through 18. Blake, would you read that? Job 40, 15 through 18. The news. Yep, that'll be good. So, the behemoth, right? What does behemoth mean? Giant, big thing, right? So we kind of talked about this at the beginning, the intro to the book of Job. What animal that we see today could this really describe? Not an elephant, because the tail is stiff like a cedar. The cedar is not the cedar trees we have. We're talking the cedars of Lebanon, you know, huge, very, very large trees. So, a dinosaur, you know. Now, this is a dinosaur that looks like it has the habitat of the hippo, right? Lives in the water and everything. More people die of hippo attacks than lion attacks in Africa. But anyway. Kind of an interesting thing. But again, a hippo has a tiny little tail. So it's interesting that here's an animal that, very large, God created it. I think it's interesting because of, you know, this from the description here, it's an animal that's extinct that we don't have, you know, a living record of. So is this a dinosaur? Sure, maybe, probably. But something that God, you know, dinosaurs don't disprove God. And so, a very important part of this. We can go to chapter 41, 1 through 5. There's the Leviathan, which is a sea monster, right? But God's question to to Job on both of this is, can you set his nose with a snare, right? You can put a ring through a bull's nose and they become a lot calmer when you do that, right? But you're going to do that with a behemoth? You're going to do that with a hippo, you know? But here's something even bigger than a hippopotamus. And so, what do you think, Job? God created this animal. God's in charge of this animal. God obviously can control this animal that he created just by speaking it into existence. Who are you when you approach that? And I think that's something that we need to see when we see, you know, animals in the world. Who made the animals? God. Who truly owns the animals then? Who could really control the animals completely? And so how, when we see an animal, we should see the handiwork of God. The small ones and the large ones, and it's, like Tabitha said, the amazing breadth of what he made. In the Amazon, and even here in this area, in the savannas of Africa, you know, we kind of have a rainy season, right? And what happens in the rainy season? We have mosquitoes, right? Well, they have a type of fish that the eggs stay in the dirt for 6 months or so. And when the rains come, the fish hatch. And then they complete their life cycle in about 6 months during the rainy season. And they eat the larva of mosquitoes. It's called killifish. They're really brightly colored. You know, I've raised killifish before, but it's amazing. And the way you raise killifish is you put peat moss in there and they mate, and then you take the peat moss and you dry it out for 6 months, and then you put that in there and you add water, and poof, all these fish come up that are large enough to eat mosquito larvae. It's amazing. You know? And so the more we look, the more we should see the amazing, amazing nature, power, majesty, however you want to put it, of God. And that's something that we need to really think about. So, we continue on. Any other parts about God's questions or answers to Job? No, and that is a beautiful thing to think about, that, yeah, God takes care of us, but he takes care of absolutely everything else, even stuff we don't know about. You know, we go to the furthest reaches of the globe and we find something new, and, you know, there's this sinkhole that was found in China, and, you know, there's a whole forest and there's animals in there and everything, and that's taken care of just the way we are. And so that is a very beautiful thought, that God takes care of it all, whether we see it or understand it or not. All right. So, chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. Dino, would you read that? All right. So when we look at God's answer, shall a fault finder, is the way my version says, contend with the Almighty? He who argues with God, let him answer it. Have you ever argued with your parents? Way back when? Yes, most of us have, right? Roman and I were talking about that. I think teenage years are what allows the parents to leave. A 10-year-old, you're like, you have to stay with me forever. A teenager is like, one year, one day, you're out of here, buddy. You know? But that's part of it. That's arguing. We're, you know, as children, as teenagers, you're learning how to order your world, and you argue very silly positions in very silly ways. And that's part of the growing up process, right? But sometimes, your parents just have to stop the arguments, right? Said, okay, I have to make the decisions for this family. I answer for this family to God. Your job in this family is to obey. You're learning this process, but we have different roles here. And so much more when God answers. Job was acting as a fault finder to God. Can you think of a job that is more impossible? Well, God, let me tell you where you're deficient here. No. And that's something that we have to remember. When we find ourselves in the fault finder position, and as we struggle through life and as we go through it, we are, most of us are going to struggle with this. And that is okay as long as we don't stay in that position, right? In other words, we sin. We can get out of what we should be doing, but we need to keep talking to people, getting help, studying, learning, praying, so that we come back and then we learn what Job learned. Logan, would you read chapter 40, verses 3 through 5? Thank you. All right. So Job's answer in verse 4 is what? Yeah, I'm small account. What shall I answer? Right? Maybe the world, well, not maybe. The world would be a better place and my life would be better sometimes if I would learn to go. Right? Why is it so hard to keep our mouth closed? Why is it so hard? Well, okay, all of you don't have trouble with this. I have trouble with this. All right. What? You can't eat. Oh, yeah. Oh, are you my daughter? Right. We always think we have something important to say. You know, we're talking with our teenager, and I don't know if you've ever said this, but I've said it a lot. It would be best if you don't talk anymore. I've literally said that a lot. It would be best if you take a breath, maybe take some time, and we can talk about this more, but the direction this is going isn't good. Right? Please think about this before we continue on, because we can have a discussion, but you cannot talk to your mother that way. You cannot talk to your father that way. That's not appropriate. So let's stop. Let's take a breath. Let's take some time and make sure that what you're about to say is not going to get you in more trouble. There's some people that are grinning. Other people are like, tell your kid that. But yeah, we've had that discussion. And the thought, this is where Job is. And it's like Jason said, we feel like we have some more information that if God just knew, we won't say it that way, if the parent just knew, then I would be, you know, I wouldn't be in trouble anymore. But sometimes it's better just to be silent, right? Silence golden, duct tape is silver, right? And so we've got to learn to do that. Sometimes it's better just to be quiet. And afterward, Tim is going to come by and go, I can't imagine you being silent, Zane. But but we do that. We need to remember that. And when it comes to accusing or fault finding with God, we have to remember that we are the same. Right. Yeah, God doesn't need these answers. God has them. But He is helpful. No, and I think sometimes we forget that. So, but yeah, we need to remember. And so in verse 8, I thought was of chapter 40 was an interesting one. God is saying, will you put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me that you may be in the right? And I thought this was a good explanation of how the world approaches God. Right? What are the excuses for sin that put God in the wrong? God wants me to be happy, so obviously He didn't mean that. How else is it? He created me this way. Yeah, it's not my fault. It's God that did it. So I'm right. God's wrong. A loving God wouldn't do this. Have you ever heard that? So when we ask those questions, or when people make those statements or those assertions, what is our answer based on Scripture? God knows what He's doing? Submit. Oh, well, that's a bad word. We don't do that. We don't submit to authority. I can't imagine being a teacher or a police officer in today's society. Pray for those people. Wow. And the teachers in the room are going, mm-hmm. But we have to understand that we don't understand, right? And that's okay. We don't have to understand. Yes, Dean. Right. A very important thing. God has the whole picture. God has the whole perspective. God has all of time before Him, all of the facts, all of the information, and we're doing the best we can, right? And we have to realize that God understands and knows more. That's the reason we go to a doctor. We trust that they know more, they understand more, but much more when we go to God is that we don't see everything. We just see our perspective, and that's limited, and we have to understand that. Yes?
There's a really scary accusation in what God asks in verse 8. He says, you're not just questioning my action, you're questioning my justice, my judgment. We say that God is unfair. We're really saying, well, He's made a mistake. And if God has made a mistake, if God isn't fair in His justice, then He's not God. You know, we call into question, or God is saying, you're calling into question my entire existence, who I am. And so that's a dangerous thing.
It's very dangerous. We don't want to be in that situation because, you know, we're just wrong when we do that. And so we need to think about that and how sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut. And when I say that, I don't mean if you're struggling with some of these things that you don't talk to other people about it, that you don't study the scripture, you don't talk through it. Because when we're struggling, we need help. We need to not pretend it doesn't exist, but to be careful of how we approach God, right? You know, there's rules. And so, you know, if you're going to meet the Queen of England, you know, there are rules that you're going to do to meet the Queen of England. And I think it was Alexander Graham Bell was showing her the telephone or something, and he was so excited and he touched her, you know, touched her arm. You know, just explaining it, and he was supposed to be killed or something. She pardoned him, thankfully, but, you gotta know the rules. And that, you know, I that might not be right. That was my remembrance from many, many years ago. But, you know, you understand. And one of the things that when we approach God, we approach Him as the Creator, who is all-knowing, all-powerful, and we need to remember those things. So, next week, I'm probably going to be traveling. So the week after that, we're going to look at chapter 42 and hopefully close this down. When we read 42, think about what God is asking of Job, how that's different than what He asked of His three friends. Notice that Elihu is not part of that. And then think about Job's restoration, but does that really cure the heartache in some ways that he's already experienced? And then note that it's never explained to Job. His original question is never answered. But how do we become okay with having questions that aren't answered? And I think we'll find it comes down to trust. And that we don't see everything. But we'll continue that next time. Thank you very much for your comments.